Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back, and it is now or never, and that debt is fraud, and there's things afoot. You know, there's things awry, things afoot, a lot of things awry, and obviously a lot of things afoot. But what I want to do is I want to kind of take a quick aside, and these usually kind of go a long time because they lead to rat holes that I end up doing swimming or at least soaking my feet, something. I actually kind of dropped the line out about talk about this with Sean. Let me just say this, folks. There's this talk from the old Q days and those people who followed Q that there is, and actually I had just been told that a Q message reports. And as I understand it, the Q reporting system or the Q communications that were being sent out had something to do with, I think, the Energy Department, something like that. Anyway, because I did not immerse myself with it. I kind of understood what they were talking about. And what has been re-emerging is this very specific talk that there is going to be executive action that will be, and I hate going down these paths, but the talk is getting to the point where, you know, I'm getting concerned, and I want to be out in front of this because I think it's really important that you start understanding where we might be if we are turning the corner here. Because if we're not driving, because we're not driving now, if we're not driving or at least trying to get a hold of the reins when we turn this corner, then there's some comeuppance coming that you're going to really regret. It's called karma, what have you. But anyway, welcome back, Sean. So let me stop being so cryptic. There's talk about an executive action where the Trump administration is going to go out and they're going to literally arrest people, haul them off to jail, and so forth and so on. Now, before we go down this path, in 2022, I did a 13-part show series on what a constitutional president could do. The president has a constitutional responsibility to effectively and faithfully execute the laws of the union. Section 3 is clearly a law of the union because it's in the Constitution. And Congress doesn't really need to do anything to execute Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. The president, with the Department of Justice, could easily just stop doing everything else that they're doing and go around and actually start removing every congressperson who has violated their oath. I mean, deliberately violated, knowingly what they're doing is an insurgency against the Constitution. In other words, AOC, almost every Democrat in Congress, Schumer, all of them are direct. And even Thune and some of the Republican leadership, they need to be removed. They need to be removed just like that because Section 3 demands it. There's no due process, folks. When I went through this, I pointed out that due process is only on the table when you're taking them and incarcerating them, when you're taking them at the threat of hanging them. In other words, if there's a potential of life, property, or liberty being lost, any of those things, fines, that type of thing, then there's to get due process. But Section 3 of the 14th Amendment is a standard. When a person has violated their oath, they've committed legal and moral perjury by actually violating their oath of office by not supporting the Constitution, by not holding people accountable, by just sitting on their hands. I mean, technically, every person in office is eligible to be removed because they're no longer eligible because they're not doing anything. Nobody is doing anything to support the Constitution. No one. So that being said, there is no need for any court involvement or anything else. The DOJ, all they have to do is go out, go into Congress, start grabbing people, basically taking their credentials, taking away their ability to walk in, have access. They won't have their, you know, keyless cards and all the proximity readers, you know, let them in and all of that. So they'll be denied access. And then they'll be told, if you try to enter into these buildings as if you still work there, we will consider that a direct assault as a citizen. We will arrest you in running an insurgency as a citizen, as a felony, and we will incarcerate you, and we will start prosecuting you for that crime in addition to all the other crimes that we're possibly going to try you for. So in other words, if they don't get the message that they better not try to invoke any type of authority anymore, because they have literally violated the law. If the people that voted them in want to clamor or what have you, then, you know, it's just a matter of, you know, curing their illiteracy and their imbecility, because bottom line, America is so sick with imbecility and illiteracy, we're allowing this kind of crap to happen when we're actually equally responsible of holding them accountable. So bottom line, the president has the ability to do this. He doesn't need to, you know, really brandish guns. I mean, it's one thing sending marshals in so that you're showing you're serious. But you don't need flak, you know, jacket, you know, guys with boots and helmets and, you know, automatic rifles and, you know, warfare type of garb on people going in to remove people. You don't need to do this. All we need to do is basically say, because the first, you know, I'll just say, when you go through first aid, you go through this triage training, you know, in the military, that, you know, stop the bleeding, start the breathing, and treat for shock. I believe that's the three key things you have to do when you're dealing with a, you know, a combat wound. So, you know, one of your one of your soldiers, one of your Marines, a sailor, what have you, has fallen next to you. You know, you're to stop the bleeding, start the breathing, and treat for shock. And so when we look at what's going on in this massive orchestrated insurgency in the United States, we have to stop the bleeding. And the way we stop the bleeding is we remove these people who are actors that are acting in accord to, you know, violations of the Constitution, whether that be Supreme Court justices, whether that be senators, whether that be congressmen, whether that be governors, whether that be attorney generals. Anybody that is actually attacking the Constitution. So all of these places, and you need to go back to that 13-part series, folks, seriously. But any of these states, any place that is claiming to have a sanctuary city and protecting illegals, every person that is involved as a public servant who has been duly elected and sworn in to support the Constitution must be removed. Because that is a direct violation of the Constitution. The Constitution demands every invader be repelled. There's no little paragraph or parentheses or anything that says, you know, note, here's an exception. You know, if we kind of let him in, then we're going to let him in, and we're going to, and if we give him citizenship, no. As a matter of fact, the law of the land states that they have to come here through the immigration process. A uniform rule of naturalization is what the states are supposed to be guided by. And the states are the ones that are supposed to actually, you know, be reading these people in as citizens, not the federal government, not the INS. But that's another story. But every invader must be repelled. So, anywho, there's this talk about this, I'll just call it an executive action, where, oh, they're going to start getting out there, and they're going to start rounding these people up, we're going to see perp walks. Now, I kind of chuckle because that's just been hyperbole, but it seems like there's these people. So I just want to get ahead of this in case it's not hyperbole. I want to get ahead of this, basically say Folks, if these people are not following the Constitution and doing it by the numbers, painting by the numbers, and they're basically exerting unconstitutional powers by throwing these people in jail without, you know, a writ, you know, without a search warrant, without all, you know, the justices all being involved. And because to do that, you actually, for somebody to be arrested, to seize their stuff, all of these types of things that we need to do, we need to go by, because, folks, a Republican form of government in our republic, the rule of law must be maintained. There's no, well, you know, these are our enemies and we, you know, we can kind of skirt that. No, we can't. We all have to uphold the Constitution. That's their oath. That's our oath. That's an oath of a citizen as well as a public servant. So anybody that says, yeah, we can do this because it's a warfare act or what? No. Remember, the first thing every combatant takes, you know, Sean, when you were, you know, sworn in, you took an oath to support the Constitution over all things, right?
Correct, sir.
And so, folks, there's nothing that can follow that. There's no parentheses behind that that says, well, except if we tell you so. Because it actually, we also have to say that we will follow all lawful orders. So if somebody gives you an unlawful order that will be a violation of the Constitution, you're not to follow that. So my point is that history repeats itself. And these types of things have happened where partisans, you know, one side takes control of the other side. And what ends up happening is that the other side takes advantage and they're not doing it by the book and they're not going to do it by the book. And if we're not holding them accountable, this is the whole point, because we're not holding anybody accountable right now. We, the people, are not doing our job. Then when they take over, that's good. That's a great thing. And that's the most concerning thing I have right now, because as far as I see it, if we're not holding them accountable to make sure that they're following the Constitution, then they're going to get away with murder. They're going to actually, we'll end up losing rights. They'll end up redefining the Constitution just like the left did, the way they want to. In other words, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. And the gander is going to be, you know, very, very upset. And the goose, which is us, you know, we're going to be giving them this control over us that will be to our demise. So I want to share this with you, the audience, and then let's kind of work through this, because I asked Sean and I asked him if he'd heard anything. And so I kind of heard this. Actually, it was like a critic or something coming out where a Q report was dropped. And this is like an official report out of the Energy Department or something like that. Have you heard anything like that?
Well, I'm seeing things on social media about it, but I haven't heard anything from any reliable sources. And I've been hearing that for a long time. Every so often, it's, oh, get ready. It's about to happen. He's going to round everybody up. So,
right. So I did lead off with the fact that this is, it's been hyperbole. This is more hyperbole. And I believe everybody is going to get up, or I should say everybody. Those who are on the conservative side, which is the silent majority of America, are going to actually get up and applaud. And what they're going to be applauding is the demise of the United States. In our 250th anniversary, they're going to be applauding this thuggery and the violation of the Constitution to move forward. I've already told you that every person that is in office that has violated their oath, which means that practically everybody, you want to start with the worst actors first and start moving, because if you do that, then by the time, before you get to the other people, they'll be going, you know what, I'm really sorry, I didn't realize I was doing these bad things and I'll never do it again. In other words, you get people to actually that are still in, because they're going to be desperate to basically be able to hold their position, and they know they're going to be watched. So they'll actually start behaving better. But the people that had, they were clueless, because I think you got this range of three or four different tiers of people in office. There are the leaders of the agenda, And then there are the, and they kind of do the planning, the strategic planning and that type of stuff. Then you have the executioners, those who go out and execute. In other words, you don't want the planners to have, you know, blood on their hands. You don't want them to be, you know, in the throes of the fight, because you need them in because they've been around, they've amassed that much influence and so forth. But I mean, like with Nancy Pelosi and so forth, they actually were so emboldened that they were actually doing everything from planning to being on the front lines, you know, actually saying things that they should never have said, which were violating their oath, like, you know, get out, get in their face, go protest, burn things down, that kind of crap. Now, there's the next step down is the useful idiot, who are ideologues. These people, they know that this is a revolution. They know they're not supporting the Constitution, nor do they care. And so that would be kind of the next, if we look at the degree from one end to the next, you have a few people on the far end that, you know, hey, this is stuff we shouldn't be doing. This is, you know, we need to do the right thing here. Even though they are doing, something's wrong, because they don't understand, because of their illiteracy, they want to do the right thing. And then there's all the people in between that, those people on the end, and the ideologues who know that this is a revolution. There's a big mass of people who are doing this because this is how we're supposed to do it. This is how I was taught. This is how it works. This is how things work. In other words, they never challenged anything. They just came in and they just went with the flow. In other words, they're not being an ideologue, and they're not actually out there supporting the invasion, that type of thing. They are, you know, going, shoot, well, what we need to do is we need to work on a compromise, because the parties, that's how that it's handled at the party level, which is all wrong. But nevertheless, they have been indoctrinated into working within the avenues that they've been told to work in. And so that's why they're stuck in these avenues. So I would start with those top tiers. Then I would start working into the ideologues. Once you start cutting into the ideologues, I think some ideologues may actually convert. But I will tell you that the large body of people, that this is what we were taught, they will start having epiphanies. They'll actually start seeing, oh, wow, I really did not realize. I'm very illiterate on this. I need to become smarter on this. Those people, I believe, will be worthy or at least redeemable in keeping an office. We don't have to get rid of everybody. But the leaders, we do. The ideologues, we do. From that point, from the ideologues to up to the leaders, those three tiers there, they need to be, you know, we need to start removing them. And then they need to prove to us. And as a matter of fact, I've said this before. You know what a first and final is?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I believe that those people who we really don't see blood on their hands, other than the fact that they were just going along, they weren't real leaders. They weren't, you know, up there speaking, you know, in the assembly of the House or the assembly of the Senate, talk about this is what we need to do. They were just kind of voting because they were going down the party lines, that type of stuff. I believe that they can get a first and final. And if they vote for something that would be considered supporting the insurrection, anybody voting for, because you got to be very clear, folks. Anything that is calling for an insurrection that's on a piece of paper that gets to the floor of the House or the Senate, whoever got that to the floor, anybody in the House or Senate needs to say, oh, hold on here. That piece of paper is supporting a direct insurrection. How did this get into this House? And then they'll find the sponsor. They'll find the author. Those people need to be removed. That should never have gotten to the floor. We should never be asked to even vote or even consider something that would be a direct violation of our oath. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
Okay. That way, once we actually start setting standards, once we actually start, you know, expecting them to do the job of cleaning house, of actually holding each other accountable as we hold them accountable, then we start, this is where the immune system that I talk about really gets, you know, kicked into high gear. And we should actually start seeing a real transformation with our body government and with our body, we the people, where we can start actually working together and discussing the problems of, okay, so now that we don't have these, that we can't do these unconstitutional things, what are we going to do? How do we deal with that? Okay, now we can start having the conversations of, what is it we need to do? Do we amend the Constitution to give them more power? Heck no. Okay, so we need to amend the Constitution so the states can actually do things that they need to do that the Constitution restricts them from doing. And that's in Article 1, Section 10, where states cannot create alliances or form a polity, i.e. a council, a Congress, or something to in regards to domestic matters. See, back when the framers created the Constitution, they never thought that government would have to be involved in so many little different things, where, you know, whether we have infrastructure, whether it's communications. I mean, who would have thought? I mean, communications were the roadways. You know, the way you got the word out is you got out on the road and you got the word to somebody. It was it was a very serial process, one-to-one, one-to-one, one-to-one. It wasn't parallel like, you know, we can do with the internet or social media or so forth. But, you know, how fast it can bloom and blossom through cross-pollination all in parallel. You know, in other words, you know, happening simultaneously in multiple directions. Serial is just one to the next, to the next, to the next. And so if you stand on the corner, you can kind of, you can call that parallel processing, but it's literally one to the many. But bottom line, and then they have to go one to one to one to one out beyond that. But anyway, my point is that, folks, if we're not in control, if you are not holding our public servants accountable when this starts happening, then you better start standing up. You need to start actually asserting constitutional standards and holding them accountable. Because if they're doing crap that's unconstitutional and you're not holding them accountable, then let the blood be on your hands and let the fall of America be on your hands, your name. It's not going to be on mine. So with that, anything you want to add or what have you, Sean? I didn't mean to do the monologue, but I've been seething since I heard this last night, because there's good people, folks. You know them. You might be one of them that thinks this is a great thing, and I'm just going to sit back and watch this great stuff happen, because we've been dying for a perp walk. This goes back to, I've been saying this for years, America wants vengeance. And if America seeks vengeance, it's going to rue the day, because it's all about the rule of law. It's about ensuring that the laws are followed and maintained. Vengeance puts the law aside. Go ahead, Sean. Anything?
Well, I remember a line from Tombstone. It's not about revenge. It's about a reckoning. And we shouldn't want revenge. Vengeance is for the Lord, not us. What we need is to reconcile our republic. And I think what's going on, and in our conversation before the show, we talked about this, and my feeling is there's this energy that's being permeated through all these different vectors that we talk about, the migration, the issue with citizens versus migrants, the issues with the fraud that the government is perpetrating, the issues with the whole trans issue.
Right.
And all of these court cases that are going through.
Right.
And whether you want to believe it or not, or accept it, there is a color revolution going on in this country.
Okay. So we're going into break really quick. So, Sean, when we come back, you got the floor when we come back, so you can finish your thoughts and get off what's on your chest. Because, folks, you need to start understanding where you're going to be standing. Who are you going to be supporting? Are you going to just sit by and watch our country crumble because the conservatives are doing this? We'll be right back after this promo. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, Sean, so go ahead and finish. You were talking about the trans and so forth. Go ahead.
Well, it's not about trans and so forth. It's about the fact that there is our government has been subverted. Mm-hmm. And it's going on. And what you're talking about is like this Q stuff. What happens if the whole Q thing is the same thing as the Epstein files? Just a big ruse to use as propaganda, and like you said, for the conservatives to all applaud, and then the next thing you know, they've set aside the Constitution and we're living in a police state.
Right.
And it's not the good guys who are really running things.
Right. Right. But it was in the name of conservatism. The cause was correct. Under the name, just like the counterculture revolution was all about liberty, right? You know, when you look at the 60s and the kids, the dropout, get high, tune in, tune on, turn on, that was more about individual freedom, free love, freedom. And when we look at that in a classic liberal sense, well, people should have their individual liberty, but they should also be held accountable and responsible. Because with liberty, it's not just freedom. You have to be accountable for your actions. You're not just free to kill somebody. You're not just free to do harm to somebody. So anyway.
Well, along those lines, people need to look at the evidence that has come out, especially recently since the internet, about what those movements were actually really all about. The civil rights movement, the feminism movement, this whole freedom movement you're talking about. Most of those things came from within the intelligence agencies and were psyops that were done on the people for a specific agenda. Mm-hmm. The civil rights movement, at the heart of it, was a means of capturing a whole generation of minorities and sweeping them up into, everybody knows Lyndon Johnson's famous quote about he's going to have them, the black people voting for Democrat for the next 200 years. And what do we have? We have people, black people voting Democrat, regardless of whether they had their best interests at heart or not. The feminist movement was a means of destroying the family.
Yes.
And the whole freedom movement, like you're talking about, the hippie movement, the counterculture movement, was a way to destroy the peace movement that people were rising up against the Vietnam War.
Yeah, and they were all kind of coinciding, but those were different factions that were arising out of this movement of freedom. But here's the interesting thing. So when was the Civil Rights Act? Do you remember?
I'm not sure.
So most people would tell you, oh, well, that was 1964.
Wasn't it 1866?
There you go. 1866 in January, it was passed and then vetoed by Andrew Johnson. But that Civil Rights Act was not a movement like the ones that we're talking about. It wasn't driven as a tumultuous revolution to fractionalize our government, or I should say to get people to want to change their government without following the process. So the radical Republicans, when they created the Civil Rights Act, they realized that the act itself could not be constitutionally manifested. Because Andrew Johnson basically laughed and says, even if you overturn my veto with two-thirds of both House, it is still just an act. It is not a power within the federal government to be able to execute. And the states can ignore it. And the states can push back and say, this doesn't apply to us. So they quickly did an about face, and they went back to the drawing board, and they took the Civil Rights Act, and they created the 14th Amendment. That's not what happened in the 60s. What happened was another shredding, or I should say another round of shredding of the Constitution, where people just said, well, this is the right thing to do. It doesn't matter if the federal government doesn't have these powers. And so now the federal government in labor basically goes around and enforces DEI, inclusion, or I should say actually, one of the terms is, representative. In other words, because I was working in an engineering firm that was, you know, classified Department of Defense engineering type of stuff. And the Labor Department was constantly breathing down our necks because we didn't have representation of the demographics locally. What did that mean? Well, that means that there were a lot of Hispanics in the San Diego area. None of them, many of them, may not have been citizens or may not have had a clearance, had any education or anything else. And so we constantly had to, you know, are we excluding them from this? No, because you now have to prove that with every applicant, you're giving every applicant a fair shake. And making sure that they're not being excluded by race. This was something that the Department of Labor imposed upon the states to do. And so that's not in the Constitution. The fact that they were spending money to create those types of standards and the states were not changing their constitution to be able to follow and support those things because the states don't even have the authority to do it. This is literally what we would call social justice. That's what they call it, using social justice to transform our government without following the constitutional process of getting three-fourths of the states to agree that we want our government to be able to do these things. We've completely lost sight of these checks and balances and these huge firewalls to keep these things from happening. And this is how we have the environmental warfare going on with us, the sexual, warfare, the family warfare, the economic warfare, all of these different warfare tactics that are being deployed and executed or prosecuted against we the people in the states. It's just overwhelming. And now, under the same auspices of, we're going to do the right thing. This is the new social justice. You're going to rue the day, folks. That's all I'm going to say. If you do not start standing up using First Amendment petitions, calling out your public servants at the county, state, and federal level, then you are going to rue the day. That's all I can say. You know, and God help those who cheer on this movement of, violations of the Constitution under the name of conservatism. Because I believe, the Bible kind of warns us that in the last days we'll all be fooled because we think it's a good thing. We think that is what is happening is good when it really won't be. And history's only proven this, folks. History always repeats itself. We're going to see this stuff happen right here in America. So anyway, anything else to add?
I just saw a little blurb earlier today where one of the upper-level people in the Democratic Party, like in the DNC, actually said the quiet part out loud and said of one of her colleagues that she's going to be the first one up against the wall when they get back in power. So there you go. We're talking about. You look at Mao, you look at Stalin, you look at all of these historic events and historic examples of what happens when this kind of thing happens, and don't think for a second that it can't happen here.
Right.
With all the things that we've seen going on in the last decade, you better wake up.
So the name I always like to use, because you can usually there's direct association of blood with the person's name, and that's Pol Pot. See, Pol Pot, you know, he rose to power very quickly, and the killing fields, because it happened in our generation. We saw this. I mean, what he did was he gathered up all of the educated, all of the elderly, the old people, the people who had some scintilla of wisdom, you know, some experience in life, to know that these things are wrong, and those people who had education that could challenge things, they were all thrown into the firing squads and buried in the killing fields.
And that's why they're bringing in all these migrants.
Mm-hmm.
People say, oh, well, it's the replacement. They're trying to get a new electorate. It goes deeper than that. They have to have people to run things, the physical labor, when they get rid of the rest of us, like you're talking about, the educated people, the people who will stand up against whatever. Yeah, that's why you're being replaced. It's not about elections.
Right.
They want to do away with elections.
That's right. And as a matter of fact, those people who are low down into the trenches, the useful idiots, they end up finding themselves in the wrong spots. In other words, they end up going with the rest of those crowds. And I say this because they know people. They know who did what. And history, these people are historians. They understand what can repeat again. And they don't want the Nuremberg trials to be repeated. So anybody that knows names and can put, you know, put people to, you know, where the bodies are buried type of thing, those people will go away because they're considered a threat because they know too much. They have the inside look. So in other words, if you think because you're a low-level marshal, a low-level captain, you know, in the battalion of the army, this Revolutionary Guard or what have you, then, you know, you're probably going to be one of those that will equally be killed with those people that you're actually rounding up to kill.
Correct. And I think that is another... goes to another side note about the third world being immigrated to Western civilization, is that it's more of a like a Fabian or a colonial type of mindset where you have the two classes. You have the people who make the things happen, and then you have the people who do the manual labor. And they're looking to eliminate those people in between who want to live and raise a family. You know, only these families matter and everybody else is just a cog.
Right. Okay. So one of the things I wanted to do, if we can move forward with the, because we need to close out on the South Carolina debates, is the speech that is done by Mr. Patrick Dollard. And I find it interesting that they highlighted this speech in the debates. And so without poisoning the well or anything else, what I'd rather do is just let you kind of go through this speech for them, or this speech for the listeners, so that we can go, so why is it that this one got highlighted? Because we saw in Massachusetts all these different speeches and so forth, but they didn't really make a point of this. So... anyway, so let's go ahead. Again, I don't want to talk too much about it because I don't want to poison the water. Go ahead. Are you ready for that? Or because we were talking about something else, you may not have been ready with the South.
Right. I didn't have all of you on the spot. Where are we?
Okay.
South Carolina, correct?
Yeah, South Carolina at the very end on Tuesday, May 20th. It starts off with the speech, or actually I have an indent for the speech of Mr. Patrick Dollard of Prince Frederick's. And so it is, you'll find it on page 78, I believe.
I got it.
Okay. Let's go ahead. Thanks.
There you go. Mr. President, I rise with the greatest diffidence to speak on this occasion, not only knowing myself unequal to the task, but believing this to be the most important question that ever the good people of this state were called together to deliberate upon. This Constitution has been ably supported and ingeniously glossed over by many able and respectable gentlemen in this House, whose reasoning, aided by the most accurate eloquence, might strike conviction even in the predetermined breast, had they a good cause to support. Conscious that they have not, and also conscious of my inability to point out the consequences of its defects, which have in some measure been defined by able gentlemen in this House, I shall therefore confine myself within narrow bounds, that is, concisely to make known the sense and language of my constituents. The people of Prince Frederick's Parish, whom I have the honor to represent, are a brave, honest, and industrious people. In the late bloody contest, they bore a conspicuous part when they fought, bled, and conquered in defense of their civil rights and privileges, which they expected to transmit untainted to their posterity. They are nearly all, to a man, opposed to this new Constitution, because they say they have omitted to insert a Bill of Rights therein, ascertaining and fundamentally establishing the unalienable rights of men, without a full, free, and secure enjoyment of which there can be no liberty, and over which it is not necessary that a government should have the control. They say that they are by no means against vesting Congress with ample and sufficient powers, but to make over them, or any set of men, their birthright, comprised in Magna Carta, which this new Constitution absolutely does, they can never agree to. Notwithstanding this, they have the highest opinion of the virtues and abilities of the honorable gentlemen from this state, who represented us in the General Convention, and also a few other distinguished characters whose names will be transmitted with honor to future ages. But I believe, at the same time, they are but mortal, and therefore liable to err. And as the virtue and abilities of those gentlemen will consequently recommend their being first employed in jointly conducting the reins of this government, they are led to believe it will commence in a moderate aristocracy, but that it will, in its future operations, produce a monarchy, or a corrupt and oppressive aristocracy. They have no manner of doubt. Lust of dominion is natural in every soil, and the love of power and superiority is as prevailing in the United States at present as in any part of the earth. Yet in this country, depraved as it is, there still remains a strong regard for liberty. An American bosom is apt to glow at the sound of it, and the splendid merit of preserving that best gift of God, which is mostly expelled from every country in Europe, might stimulate indolence and animate even luxury to consecrate herself at the altar of freedom. My constituents are highly alarmed at the large and rapid strides which this new government has taken towards despotism. They say it is big with political mischiefs and pregnant with a greater variety of impending woes to the good people of the southern states, especially South Carolina, than all the plagues supposed to issue from the poisonous box of Pandora. They say it is particularly calculated for the meridian of despotic aristocracy, that it evidently tends to promote the ambitions, views of a few able and designing men, and enslave the rest, that it carries with it the appearance of an old phrase, formerly made use of in despotic reigns, and especially by Archbishop Laud in the reign of Charles I, that is, non-resistance. They say they will resist against it, that they will not accept of it unless compelled by force of arms, which this new Constitution plainly threatens. And then, they say, your standing army, like Turkish Janissaries enforcing despotic laws, must ram it down their throats with the points of bayonets. They warn the gentlemen of this convention, as the guardians of their liberty, to beware how they will be accessory to the disposal of, or rather sacrificing, their dear-bought rights and privileges. This is the sense and language, Mr. President, of the people, and it is an old saying, and I believe a very true one, that the general voice of the people is the voice of God. The general voice of the people to whom I am responsible is against it. I should never betray the trust reposed in me by them. Therefore, shall give my hearty dissent.
Interesting. So they made a point at the very end of highlighting this one particular speech. And so when you look at what he's talking about, why was it that a Bill of Rights was not necessary?
Because the government was only delegated specific enumerated powers.
Correct.
They didn't have the power to affect anything but those things.
Correct. So when it came to their religious expression, you couldn't practice that religion here. That the federal government had no power to be involved in enforcing or creating any regulation respecting religious expression. The same thing with speech. The same thing with what you're doing in your home. Whether you're conspiring to, you know, assassinate Abraham Lincoln, you know, it's one thing that, you know, they hear about that. But if they hear that you are into conspiring, then they have to get a writ by a judge to be able to inspect. And actually, when they did pass the Bill of Rights, the Bill of Rights actually set that standard. But even before then, it's considered free speech. When Thomas Jefferson ran for president, and before this apparatus that we call today Secret Service, you should have seen the visceral. You should have seen the disdain and the the language that came in letters. There was I can only recount, I'm only paraphrasing what I remember reading of a letter from a gentleman in Massachusetts that, you know, talked about, you know, how he hated Jefferson and how, you know, if Jefferson ends up winning the election, because of course he was all in on John Adams. He said if Jefferson wins the election, he's going to gather, you know, his armaments and come down, and he's going to shoot him and draw and quarter him, you know, and basically, you know, Jefferson will wish he had never been born, kind of thing. And you know, those types of things you could express. It was the freedom of speech. And to this day, you can actually say those things, but they've actually made laws that say you can't. The Bill of Rights protects that Congress shall make no law respecting the freedom of speech or regulating speech at all. And yet, you can't go and sit in front of Congress and lie to them. Well, hold on. Is that the freedom of speech by lying to them and misguiding them?
What about if you're under oath?
So here's the question.
Does that make a difference?
Well, so here's the question. If you're under oath over something that they have the authority to investigate, then yes, that's a legitimate oath. But if you're under oath over steroids in baseball, hold on here. Do they have the authority to put you under oath? You see my point? No.
Most, right. It doesn't come under the Constitution.
Correct? That's correct. So most points of what they investigate usually aren't within their power. Usually aren't within their power. Almost all of those types of things. I mean, they have the important, you know, role of investigating the elections. Yeah, they're supposed to make sure that, you know, each member of Congress has properly and legitimately secured a win in a proper, clean, proper election. So they have the power to do that, and they can basically put people under oath for that particular purpose because that's within the Constitution. But most of the stuff when Congress actually, so Congress can investigate the president's, you know, the office of the president. And when we get into 1793, this is when Madison and Eldridge Gerry and James Madison spend a long time investigating and subpoenaing for information on Alexander Hamilton and what he was doing with this new national bank. and challenging him. And this is one of the things that really bothered Washington, because it was besmirching his administration. But that's just because Washington didn't know any better than what was going on, and he put too much confidence in Hamilton. Interestingly enough, I've told you that James Madison wrote most of the correspondence between the Congress and the White House, and the White House and Congress. Did you know? Did I mention that to you?
I'm sure you have.
Okay, so in the very beginning, like the proclamation for Thanksgiving, that proclamation was written by James Madison to go back to Congress. It was written by his hand. Washington read it. He may have scrubbed it. He rewrote it in his hand and sent it off. In other words, Washington really wasn't very sure of how to correspond, what to say, because he was just more of a military mind than a, you know, a political-minded person. And so Madison found himself working double time in helping Washington. So, and as a former, as a Virginian, there was this, you know, this, I'll just say, this bond between them. But the bond with Hamilton went deeper with Washington because of the war. And Washington chose to follow Hamilton instead of listening to Madison and what Madison was talking about. And so, because bottom line, you know, here's the Secretary of the Treasury being dragged across the coals in Congress. Now, it was really, unfortunately, too late for anything to be done about it, because by that point in time, Congress had become fully compromised, and there was no way Madison and Eldridge Gerry was going to get the House of Representatives to vote against Alexander Hamilton. So even though they were able to bring up all sorts of facts about Hamilton and what he was doing, Congress still voted to basically look the other way and let Hamilton move forward. And that speaks to what we're talking about. When men decide to look away from their responsibilities and staying within those enumerations and those explicit powers, not implied powers, but those specific powers delegated, that's when we see what this gentleman, this Mr. Patrick, whatever, Patrick Dollard, then those things can come to pass. It's not that he was clairvoyant. Everything that he was speaking on was contingent upon men conspiring or colluding and violating and not staying within the enumerations, as you basically said. Well done, my friend. Well done. So when we come back, we're going to end the show here. When we come back tomorrow, we're going to be starting with the Virginia ratification debate. So you need to dig those up. And that way you can actually start diving into the Virginia ratification debates along with us. This is my favorite out of all the debates, because they cover topics unlike anybody else or any other of the states in debating the Constitution, such as martial law, so forth. Anyway, folks, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.